If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. It is mini budget day. The 12th of November saw many of us as financial journalists, economists, industry leaders, and participants within the financial cluster making their way down to Cape Town. All of this to participate in the medium-term budget policy statement. Why does this matter? It's essentially National Treasury's way of offering us guidance to say, here's a playbook, a strategy that we'd like to implement between the short and medium term of South Africa's fiscal policy. Any particular changes to tax or proposed reforms, additional support we might consider, new targets, shifts in dynamics are all confirmed at the medium-term budget policy statement. Now, it's a mini budget, essentially, because unlike the budget that takes place in February, this is just a guideline to what we can expect, can see being deliberated in the next 3 years versus what will be immediately tabled and implemented within the next 12 months. So today was a good day. Many have actually said that this is equal to being a G20 budget. It's one that actually speaks to an international audience, provides a sense of confidence, sustainability and calm, and most importantly, a level of alignment between key financial institutions in the country. Our next guest is going to give us some insight into the overview of the budget speech, and we'll talk through some highlights that we need to consider. For that, we are joined by Sfiso Skenjana, economist and managing director of ESG Analytics. Sfiso, such a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you again for your time. I know we had a wonderful catch-up in the sun, participated in seeing the minister and various other participants in the financial cluster make their way in and out of parliament today. But overall, it does seem as though there's a heightened level of confidence regarding the budget speech, largely because of an alignment that we see between monetary policy and fiscal policy. That 3% inflation target has been confirmed. I'm quite keen to hear your reading on this.
Good evening, Gugu, and of course to the listeners at home. Certainly basking down on the Cape Town sun. I think you've made an interesting point about this being a G20 budget. I'm unfortunately not as optimistic or as energized as most who read through the budget or at least sat through it. And I'll share some of my points of worry. I think there's often, so there's a term we speak of, which is circulatory capital. And simply what it talks about, it's the movement of money associated particularly in vis-a-vis a democratic dispensation. What it often does, it's the home of what we talk about as kind of the Rand boogeyman. It's the home of capital. It's the home of the investor conversation. When we say that there's investor confidence, et cetera, we often see it expressed through circulatory capital, as we often speak about it. And so if you look at what's happened with our government bonds, those have strengthened in recent days. Our currency has remained a bit resilient, and so it speaks to the G20 budget as you're talking about it. And so far as foreign capital finds us quite interesting in that particular context. However, there's the part that is missing, which is around democracy and also how it solves for social justice. And for me, the missing part was a sense of intentionality around invigorating growth in the South African economy, optimizing the use of capital towards meaningful growth and catalytic growth projects. And I often use this example, Gugu, is that in an environment where you've got a constrained budget, you've got one rand, how do you decide between spending on a school or a hospital? And the only way you do that is to have an impact lens and impact quotient and understanding that for every rand that we spend, this is the buck we're going to get. This is, for me, the part about democracy as the role it plays in economic justice. It's missing in our budget. And for me, it still leaves me quite concerned for the future growth prospects of the country.
I'm intrigued that you say that, and I think it's an important point that you mentioned regarding this theme and concept of circulatory capital and not really addressing the needs that we fundamentally have in the country, which is growth. Even the growth targets being reduced slightly in terms of the current mini budget or medium term budget policy statement. But the reforms that we do see being implemented from a power and logistics point of view, the minister did touch on that very briefly, including ongoing support to mobilize private public partnerships in municipal areas and unlocking economic opportunities there. Is that not sufficient enough to drive us to a level of growth?
Well, tell the full story, right? And say, when we are going to tap into, a reserve fund to support the growth and development and reforms around Transnet, the impact it's going to have on our books is X and Y and Z, because we're going to see that showing at least in our contingent liabilities, right? Because there's that reserve. And so that money, that's a guarantee. And the same thing that is associated with the rollout on energy trading and transmission infrastructure, that's got to be funded, and we're going to be paying a guarantee behind that. That increases your contingent liabilities too. What that tells you then is that that debt ceiling at about 77 maybe might push to maybe 79-80%. And so we must talk about it and tell the full story, so that we don't talk about debt in an isolated context. We understand that debt as an enabling thing for institutional reform is why we are allowing ourselves to widen that debt ceiling. And so for me, the story mustn't start and end somewhere. It must be complete, Gugu, so that we then understand that it's not borrowing for borrowing's sake. It's borrowing to support the initiatives that are then bringing back capacity to key state-owned enterprises. Municipalities, are a massive issue still for us. 87% of municipalities are financially, in essence, defunct. And so that municipal capacity building program has to be, we've got to be able to see, have a view around how it meaningfully gets funded, where from a human capital point of view, from an infrastructure, et cetera, and all of those things, because you've got some municipalities that aren't able to generate revenue, for example, just by virtue of where they are. How do you keep that municipality functional, given the developmental agenda also of the municipality? So have the full conversation so that we then understand where the rand starts and ends. And I think this is, for me, the thing that keeps missing, as we're hearing our minister, of course, give us a sense, at least from his perspective, of optimism around these institutional reforms.
And that's perhaps where the challenge still remains, right? As you say, in terms of telling the full story and as well as the full picture. Some might also look at the SARS or tax story regarding revenue. And as we see, they're beating expectations, or rather their targets that they've put for themselves in terms of revenue collection, well above just over 900 billion rand, if I'm not mistaken, and seeing increases there. And that's just but one lever, as you correctly state, that revenue is one thing, but how it's spent is another. How it's accounted for is an even more peculiar aspect that we need to dig deep into. So I guess what I'm asking here, Sfiso, is when you look at the full spectrum of some of the interventions we've put in play, how we earn our money, how we spend our money, and of course, how we're able to cultivate an environment supportive of growth, where are we falling short?
Sure. So, one SARS needs to, it's one thing to celebrate that the we've recorded better tax collection than anticipated. But already we heard that we had, was it 21 billion rand shortfall in terms of tax revenue in February. And that's expected through the medium term. And so it was going to be 21, I think 24, 26. And so there's still inherently a hole that is not closing. That's the thing that catalyzed that problematic VAT conversation, because we're trying to figure out how do we close our collection hole quicker than not. I think it's exciting, it's positive that we keep capacitating SARS more. There's a lot more money that keeps coming into SARS to support their technology, their intelligence, and all of that stuff. And so, yes, I think let's continue supporting SARS where we can. But that's just on the collection front, right? But you've got to look at the base. Gugu, as it stands in South Africa, we've got 16% of the money collected from SARS coming from corporate income tax. Out of that, you've got companies that have a taxable net income north of 200 million, in essence, make up 60%, and that's about 380 companies make up 60% of what you collect from your corporate income tax. And so you've got a tax concentration base at your corporate income tax level. Mm. And so we need to think about broadening the tax base and really doing big interventions for SME participation in a real way, so that you can broaden your tax base, because there's no more space left at your personal income tax level to be able to tax there. And that's why we talk about being at the top of the Laffer curve. And so that's some of the collection issues. Expenditure, I think, Gugu, of course, we've got to look at catalytic projects, right? I'll give you an example. The business process outsourcing sector, which is the call center industry in South Africa, is one of the, I think it's now competing at number two in the world in terms of the, you know, how it competes and the growth that you're getting there. At some point, we're getting about compound annual growth of about 35% per annum out of that sector. That was a project that was government funded as a catalytic project, where we looked at the role of incentives in terms of how to support a burgeoning industry that offers real competitive advantage in a global context. And so we've got to look at these revealed comparative advantages as catalytic opportunities to have another call center industry coming out of South Africa and equivalent in terms of a catalytic industry growth. And then lastly, of course, really, I think finding, you know, green shoots in a complex economy, complex global market. I think Trump has helped us ask tough questions about, you know, who do you want to globally befriend? And I think it really opens the canvas around to re-explore our continental partnerships, as well as then, of course, partnerships with the likes of China, because, I mean, in the critical mineral space, for example, we've got 80% of global production of manganese, and China's got 85% of processing capacity there. And so these are some of the partnerships that really, I think, could support in finding, innovation transfer, technology transfer, partnerships, et cetera, that aren't concentrated in the United States. And I think these are the things that, for me, ought to come out in the budget and say the money we're spending, we already see what it can do for this sector. We can see what it can do for developmental outcomes in the health space. You know, not being responsive that Trump took out PEPFAR and now we're plugging a hole, but really having a clear health, a public health policy strategy that then is informed by how we spend that money.
Skenjana, I'm very keen for us to also explain what this particular budget means for us as ordinary South Africans, because it's in these particular times that we hear about any proposed changes to tax, and we understand that VAT debate now being scrapped. But beyond that, nothing clear being mentioned about social grants specifically, support for SMMEs, or even, you know, how South Africans can play a much more vibrant role in terms of understanding where the allocation of their capital goes. So for us as everyday South Africans contributing to the economy, what needs to be talked about, I mean, we'll discuss in the boardroom, at the Braai, and at the school drop-off tomorrow.
I tried to run away from this part as much as I can, because it was going to bring me to this inflation conversation, which really bores me.
Yeah.
This inflation targeting conversation, because again, at a normal South African perspective, Gugu, the real feel inflation we feel is not what is reported as inflation. We've had a conversation with the guys at Stats to say around, is the basket really reflective of ordinary people's lives? And we talk about, for example, administered prices still remaining in double digits. NERSA gave Eskom 12.8% increase. When you're talking about standard of living and cost of living and painful feeling that pain, that's what people are really feeling. They're not feeling a 3% a real feel effect from an inflation point of view.
Mm.
And that's government is the one who's giving us administered prices, cost of water, and we can see everything, all the collapse of water infrastructure is telling you that the cost of water is going to remain elevated. And so you're telling me that you're trying to use a monetary policy tool to cool down inflation that you are creating, which is a massive problem. The other source of inflation is oil, right? 25% of the variation of inflation in South Africa is a function of changes in oil price. And so we've got now an oil glut in the world, in terms of oversupply. And that's what's keeping oil prices depressed. As soon as you've got a shift in that, then the real fuel comes back to us. Taxis never drop their taxi fares when they increase, when oil prices are down. That number always goes up. That's the real fuel effect for the normal South African. And so for me, this budget's got to be kind of responsive. So how do we create meaningful buffers for people to not, catch the whims and the flows of these external or imported components of inflation that, in essence, that a monetary policy tool cannot affect at this point in time. So that this whole debacle around this 3% for me is a moot discussion at best, because it still does not show a thorough reflection of the real drivers of inflation and also why inflation is not an input factor, but it's an outcome. So you can't have a strategy around an outcome. You got to have a strategy around the things you put into the pot. So for me, it's really that people walking in and smelling the taste of the curry and saying it's the smell of the curry we're looking forward to and not actually the combination of the spices you put in the pot. And got so you. I think...
Got you. I just want to jump on that one there. Mm-hmm. So, and you raise a valid point, right? And I guess it's a gentle reminder for us to, as you say, understand what the outcomes are that we're looking for here. Beyond just the smell of a wonderful curry, you want to enjoy a wonderful meal. And again, does this also speak to, I guess, the lack of clarity as to where growth will come from? Because many have argued that lower inflation target means lower interest rate, which will drive consumption spending. Consumption spending, great for growth in South Africa, but doesn't speak to GDP, which is what we actually produce. And that's, again, where we still require significant shifts in the reforms that are implemented to ensure that manufacturing plants and mines have power. And they're also able to access rail and freight infrastructure to actually export these products to international markets. So are you saying, in the description that you're giving, that the inflation target perhaps is eluding us? There's an illusion created around the kind of growth factors that should be focused on in the country.
Absolutely. It's drawing us away from the right conversation. We've got ghost towns that used to be towns that had industrial capacity. We've had Clover leave some places. There's a threat of ArcelorMittal leaving Newcastle. This is the real fuel economy for the ordinary South African. When we're talking about this district development model that the ANC has proposed, why is that then not coming through in the spending agenda? Right, because it's growth at the nodes at the district that's going to reinvite and reinvigorate the growth at the district level, because we know Gauteng cannot carry the urbanization rate. We know KZN can't do it and Cape Town can't. And just to give you an example, Google, just in housing in Gauteng, government currently builds about 15,000 houses per annum. And yet the net migration is about 200,000 people coming into Joburg. And so you can already just imagine the scale of pushing that economic activity back to the node so that you don't have this excess migration, because there's no activity, economic activity in those small towns. So for me, the minister must then talk about the district development model and money geared towards reinvigorating this thing that they've built for us, which is this DDM as a thing that potentially can bring growth. So kind of connect the loop and show intentionality then around, growth as a primary thing that keeps us up at night, and not at 3% that means nothing for someone who has been jobless for 18 months.
100%. You mentioned so many valid points, and there's more to bring out of this, though. Sfiso's Kenjana, such a pleasure speaking to you, sir. I've always threatened that you need to do the show with me. I think the day might be closer than we've confirmed. So get ready. Always invigorating speaking to you, sir.
Thank you
so much. That's Sfiso's Kenjana, economist and managing director of ESG Analytics, joining us on the show tonight. So as you've heard, lots of robust debate regarding the South African budget speech, the medium-term budget policy statement. And yes, there are a number of highlights, like the 3% inflation target. And as you've heard from Sfiso, his particular opinion is that, well, it's much ado about nothing, because it doesn't speak to the catalytic projects that we need. And think about that word, catalytic projects. This is where there's a multiplier effect. If you make sure that you strike a match and then you light a candle and it lights another, there's almost this ripple effect that should take place in the economy. And those are the kind of sectors that we need to be investing in. And a simple example might even be, you know, as you mentioned, call centers, but also understanding how the hospitality industry does the same. In the past, manufacturing used to have that influence in South Africa, but we do need to get back to the fundamentals of Operation Vulindlela, which we know is a key priority where some factors regarding reforms have been implemented already in South Africa. Oh, there's so much to discuss. Stay with us, share your views, get in touch, share your opinions as well, because this budget is for you too. So the SARS ensuring that they are exceeding their targets. What does that say for you? What does that mean to you? Making sure that there is a plan to actually implement and overhaul some of the performance of municipalities in the country. How do you feel about that? Are you someone who works in local government? Are you someone who works in the politics of local government, who understands the leadership deficit that we have and how that influences the performance of economies in those spaces? Or perhaps you're just like me, an ordinary South African citizen who has a keen interest in how economics work. We want to hear from you. Share your views on 063-688-0959. In a moment, we're going to give you feedback on many of the financial cluster leaders that I caught up with. As a team, we were out on the ground speaking to them post the delivery of the mini budget. We'll give you some feedback into those conversations today. But don't be shy. We want to hear your thoughts too. 063-688-0959. It is almost 6:45.
Kaya Biz.
Monday to Thursday.
6 to 8 p.m.
Kaya 959.
959.
On the street.
On the air. On the air.
It is just after 6:45. You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. As has been mentioned, it's been budget day. National Treasury has shared their medium-term budget policy statement with us, and there are a few highlights, largely trying to make sure that we do see a reduction in our debt, though that's still threatening to be well above the target range we have. One thing that certainly came through is that, yes, government for the moment hasn't offered any stringent requirements or support for any state-owned entities, though that is an ongoing conversation that they have with them as key stakeholders and as an investor in their business. Myself, together with the Kaya 959 team, Katleho Sekgoto has been keeping you abreast of the budget speech throughout the day in hourly news updates. Snenjabulo Sibeko, the producer of Kaya Biz, has also been on the ground, making sure that we find the right guests. And of course, we've been at it with many of our peers and colleagues in the media fraternity. So as you can imagine, when the minister steps out of parliament, everybody wants a piece of him. We got a piece of him too. So this next piece of conversation in this audio clip is one where we doorstop the finance minister to get his immediate reactions to the balancing of growth projections in South Africa, but also our debt concerns and debt burden, which currently sits at about 77% as our debt to GDP ratio. Here's his brief response to some of the questions we posed.
When we collect money, we don't collect money to... It's not something you're going to keep it like a bank. When we collect money, we collect it to use for the betterment of our people. You can't pay debt only. You've got to pay some debt. You've got to meet some problems our people face on the ground. I've always maintained a balance between these two. You know, you've got Eskom is not under my control. You've got Denel not under my control. What I do when I look at these things, I say, what is the interest of the country? Should I allow Denel to collapse because they've not submitted financial statement? Or should I help them to survive so that they should be able to submit financial statement? Can you see the choices are bad? That's the nature of the job.
Speaking of support, especially for state-owned entities, you did mention ongoing support for the likes of Transnet and Eskom. Any projections there as to what that might entail in the medium term?
Announce any support. I said first day I came here, I said it's going to be tough life. I'm employing that tough life using a carrot and a stick in order to get people to comply.
Is this the stick?
Which one?
What you've announced or lack of announcement today?
It's a lack of announcement is a stick because I'm keeping them guessing what's my next move so that they must behave so that if there's any carrot, it should be in February.
That is the voice of Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana there after his delivery of the medium-term budget policy statement. And as you've heard, context there, he's basically saying, look, we haven't provided any guarantees to Transnet, to Eskom, or any other state-owned entity. So that essentially is some form of disciplining and consequence management to say, well, hey, unless you get your numbers and your finances correct, we're not going to sit here and continue to offer copious amounts of guarantees. So a carrot or a stick, as you've heard, does seem as though we hear the finance minister essentially saying that, hey, you know, take it easy. These businesses do need to perform before we continue stepping in as a shareholder. We'll continue giving you feedback on that, though. The finance minister was not the only person we managed to catch up with. We also spoke to the Commissioner of SARS, Edward Kiesvetter, who also gave us some perspective around the improvement in performance at SARS. If there's anything we've noticed, especially after the last few years, is that there's been a heightened level of capacitating or capacity building at SARS to make sure that more taxes can be collected. They meet their targets in terms of revenue and, of course, continue to find ways to make sure that the collection and rewards and fundamental allocation of this revenue is actually used for the benefit of South Africans. We spoke to SARS Commissioner Edward Kiesvetter, and he gave us some context around how revenue collection for the first 6 months of the 2025-26 financial year was actually 9.3% higher than the corresponding period. So overall, seeing a significant improvement in the taxes that have been collected. Here's his response. Now with the Commissioner of SARS, Mr. Edward Kiesvetter. Seems like it's all smiles for you as the revenue service, given the fact that you're beating expectations in terms of revenue targets. Perhaps let's start on that note, as well as your overview of the reaction to the mini-budget.
Well, maybe it's a grimace of pain and not a smile. Of course, we're excited. And let me tell you why we're excited, Gugu. Because we understand more than anyone that the revenue we collect touches the lives of ordinary people. And for us, that's what wakes us up in the morning. That's what inspires us. We sometimes hope that the quality of the spend and the allocation is deserving of the hard fought for gains, because this is money that belongs to taxpayers. We must never forget that. What was pleasing is that, notwithstanding the fact that some of the economic assumptions at the printed estimate had trended down, like GDP from 6.4 to 5.4, job growth isn't what it was thought to be, a significant swing, negative swing in imports, have all meant that the economy produced less than what we thought it would produce. But thankfully, our compliance efforts have grown by almost 14% year on year, or 164 billion rand of what the minister announced is compliance revenue. So half of the 18 billion is at least from compliance effort. And that is the momentum that we hope will not only be sustained, but improve in the second half of the year. We made a commitment to deliver the additional revenue if the minister makes the further investment in us, and we will honor that commitment. We will die trying, because we know we're not working for the minister, we're working for South Africans.
And speaking of that value, of course, there's many articles, as you say, that do speak to deriving that particular value for South Africans. But what I'm also keen to get your views on is the increased level of capacity that SARS also has invested in. Perhaps you can talk us through that actually has driven most of these efficiencies further.
So it is important that we attract the right skill to SARS. Let me give you an example. Last year, as we collect some of the, what we call the easier debt, you know, debt that requires a phone call, a nudge, an SMS, requires a level of skill that is at the lower end, right? Not to diminish or trivialize that work, but on a skill spectrum. Then we find ourselves now, the debt is more complex. A lot of the debt that ends up on our books are now debts from dismantling illicit syndicates. In the first half of the year, one of the big lumps of debt of over 4 billion just came from unwinding a single syndicate. So the debt is more complex, and what that requires is a different level of skill. So we've now recruited 81, and we hope to increase that to 250. But these are not debt collectors who makes the phone call. These are people who understand how to analyze balance sheets and income statements when a taxpayer asks for a repayment agreement. We have to assess the credit risk. When they ask for a debt compromise, we have to assess their means to pay before we can compromise the debt. Taxpayers don't, when we come to them, shout, yippee, you found me. They fight you, so we need legal debt collectors. We have seen an increase of 35% in writs of execution. So we need litigating attorneys. We need legal debt collectors. So the level of skill we require is significantly higher than the level of skill when it's just a call that you must make. So these are some of the things. But in addition to that, we would not be able to do this work if it wasn't for our rapid deployment of technology and artificial intelligence to help us, for example, do debt propensity modeling, to help us see taxpayers who ought to be registered who are not registered, taxpayers who don't declare everything that they should declare. So the deployment of data science, of AI, has been in the last 6 years a significant game changer for us, but not just for enforcement, also for providing a better service. I mean, this year, one of the things I am most pleased about is that almost 6 million taxpayers didn't have to file. We did the work for them. And those who did file got their assessment results in under 5 seconds. That's world class. And that almost 90% of taxpayers to whom a refund is due receive their refunds in under 72 hours. We could not do that if we didn't have this focused effort to modernize our platform.
These interventions have been fruitful. Does that mean that we no longer have to have the debate around VAT?
Well, the minister kind of hinted today. And as I say, Minister of Finance will always look at how to cover the shortfall, right? You either reduce revenue or you raise taxes. We have made a commitment that through the improved compliance work, if we can close that gap between revenue and cost, but also the minister and the treasury team must look at bringing the expenditure closer to the revenue. Live within your means. We think that a combination of those things should put the minister in a stronger position to not have to consider raising taxes, particularly not taxes that affect the poorest, like VAT.
SARS Commissioner, Mr. Edward Kisvetta. Well, you heard it there from the man who takes care of SARS himself, essentially giving us an overview of some of the interventions they've put in place to make sure that we can see greater revenues being collected by SARS. And as you've heard, basically saying, look, right now we're on the right track. So there's no need for us to have that debate regarding VAT that we had earlier on this year. Recall, that was actually part of the reason why we didn't see the initial budget speech being delivered in February, because there just wasn't a sense of alignment or that it would be well received by members of parliament and greatly upset the flow of progress and delivery of the budget speech. Share your thoughts, 063-688-0959. Interesting one on the SARS Commissioner. Hopefully we'll still speak to him next year in February with the budget speech, but bear in mind that his tenure does come to an end at the end of April next year. Right now, we're well aware that there is already a standing committee that is going through the process of appointing a new commissioner. For the moment, though, it is 2 minutes to 7 o'clock. Stay with us. We'll come back with more analysis on the budget speech from the Minister of Agriculture, Minister John Steenhuisen. We'll speak to the Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Deputy Minister Zuko Kolimbi, and even the Minister of Health to give us some perspective on their analysis of the numbers, but how this budget makes sense for our economy, our people, and their portfolios. It's 2 minutes to 7 o'clock.
Run that back. On the street.
On the air.
And online at kaya959.co.za.
Just before 7 o'clock, you're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959 with myself, Kukuletu Mfupi. We're getting down to business, all right. The business of the mini budget that took place today. That's the medium-term budget policy statement shared by Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana regarding some of the policy shifts, levels of alignment that we might see, and guidance as to how best our fiscal policy is being structured for the next year to 3 years. Now, what's important for us to bear in mind as well that has been shared is that there's been no outright clarity in terms of support for any state-owned entities. And the minister, in an earlier audio clip I shared with you, that where we just stopped him at the steps of parliament, was the fact that he's using a carrot and a stick analogy around the level of support that he's providing for state-owned entities, largely referring to Transnet and Eskom. And it's intriguing to see some of your feedback, and I appreciated a good commentator and leader within the entrepreneurship space giving us feedback on how exactly the concerns are, or what the concerns are regarding the minister's position on state-owned entities, and a tweet coming through that says, the attitude of a shareholder from the finance minister in relation to SOEs is upsetting. And I can agree with that. Perhaps if that's, you know, the key strategy, that, you know, stick or carrot, it does raise some concerns in terms of the level of support that needs to be provided for SOEs. But I'm keen to get your thoughts, because some South Africans feel frustrated that after years of financial malfeasance, inadequate financial management, leadership dearths as well that have taken place in some of these organizations, that a heightened level of accountability needs to be held to the executive teams of these companies running state-owned companies to make sure that there's efficacy. And as a shareholder, at some point you decide, okay, well, that's it. The taps are running dry and I'm washing my hands. But share your thoughts on that one. 0636880959. We always love hearing from you and getting divergent perspectives on conversations that help us build the country and its economy effectively. One key aspect of the economy has to be agriculture. And if you know by now, agriculture is a significant contributor to economic growth, especially in South Africa. It's the reason why we saw an uptick in the GDP just in the second quarter of this year. As a primary sector, it contributes about 3% to GDP directly, but it hasn't been without its flaws and concerns. Think about foot and mouth disease. Think about access to international markets to encourage trade. On the back of these themes, this is why we caught up with John Steenhuisen. He's the Minister of Agriculture in South Africa. We asked him for his immediate reaction to the budget speech and a few other themes that are up his alley. Let's take a listen to this. Quick one. I guess firstly, just your reaction to the midterm overview in terms of budget allocations and your response there.
I think it's great. I think it's a very clear indication that we've adopted a reform-minded approach. We've adopted a disciplined approach to fiscal management. And I think that this is heralding a new era in South Africa's economy. And I think that we're already starting to see some of the green shoots. And if we're able to stick to the fiscal discipline, if we're able to stick to the processes outlined today, I think that South Africa's headed for a really good growth. I think what's also to be welcomed is the impact that this is going to have on lowering household inflation and delivering on one of the second pillars that the GNU set out to, which was to lower the cost of living for ordinary South Africans.
Coupled with that, agriculture is a portfolio you take care of, a big contributor to our GDP. Very briefly, it's needed a lot of support. What interventions are we seeing, especially regarding foot and mouth trade as well with our international partners?
So obviously, we have to get biosecurity under control in South Africa, both from a plant health perspective and well as a animal health perspective. We have vaccinated over 1 million animals across South Africa to get foot and mouth disease under control. And we're obviously putting in place a new track and trace system that was released last week by the Red Meat Industry Services, RMIS. And I think that coupled with partnership with government, we'll be able to get on top of it. What doesn't help is, like we've seen in the Western Cape, we have unscrupulous speculators buying cattle in FMD areas and washing them through provinces like the Western Cape to make a profit. It's not government that moves animals around. It is auctioneers, it's speculators, it's the industry itself. And I think we're calling for the industry as well to partner with us and to play ball, follow the regulations. Don't move animals out of foot and mouth areas, and certainly don't bring them into FMD free areas, because you're making your own industry and your own long-term profitability and you're putting it at risk, and you risk doing economic damage.
What additional support do you need in order to halt this?
Well, the biggest thing is for everyone to just stick to the rules. Then, of course, to obviously get the cooperation of police as well to help us with animal movement. But as I said, the new track and trace system that the RMIS have launched, I think is going to be become the new national standard, and you won't be able to move animals around the country without using that particular system. And then I think, you know, vaccines, and we will be developing our own vaccine, which should be available in the first quarter of next year. We're obviously looking towards manufacturing that at scale. We obviously have to look at public-private partnerships or other partnerships with existing laboratories to be able to produce those at scale so that we can adopt the same path that Brazil used, which was to vaccinate the entire national herd and then to move towards a FMD-free status with vaccination. And then once you achieve that status with WOHA, to move towards FMD-free status without vaccination. And then the world is our oyster for our red meat industry. We'll be able to get into Europe. We'll be able to get into many other countries where we're currently not able to do. And that can only be good for the red meat industry and all the players in it. And that's why we say it's in their own interest to cooperate with us, stick to the rules, and make sure that they are holding true to the biosecurity regulations.
That is the voice of the Minister of Agriculture, Minister John Steenhuisen. I caught up with him outside Parliament today on the back of the budget speech just to get his perspective on the midterm budget speech and, most importantly, some key aspects that are still influencing the agricultural space in South Africa. And as you've heard, foot and mouth disease being one of those aspects. He referred to Brazil. And just to give you some perspective, Brazil in the past had actually implemented a mandatory cattle vaccination against foot and mouth disease. Essentially, these particular vaccination programs were meant to make sure that they limited the spread of foot and mouth disease. In a country like South Africa, it's not mandatory. Typically, the quality of our meat has always been recognized for being world class without any ailments. And of course, also bearing in mind that at some point, if there are certain certifications around health diseases, it does limit the markets that you can actually export to. So it's a key aspect and key area of concern. So maybe some lessons we can learn from our international peers. Something else that's been on our minds as South Africans when it comes to our economy is the trade and investment environment. So who better to speak to than the Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition? In a world where we've got B20, G20 coming up, South Africa, like many other economies across the world, have been challenged by heightened levels of tariffs from markets like the US. And we've had to find ourselves opening up our opportunities and bilateral conversations to new peers, some existing relationships, but even further that we needed to entrench some of those existing relationships. Trade has become the big name item for the year. So we asked the Deputy Minister in the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, Zuko Godlimpi, to share his perspective on the numbers and the budget speech that was shared today, but most importantly, how this aligns with his portfolio of driving trade in the country. Minister, first one, your immediate reaction to the medium budget today.
Look, I think my reaction is that the indicators at a macroeconomic level are pretty good for what was said in the primary budget earlier in the year. The strategy of managing public finances is still anchored on the same perspectives that was outlined at the time. We've seen positive collection on the tax front, which is a welcome indicator as well. And the South African economy has been much more resilient than what was expected in light of the Trump tariffs that we've been facing. So I think on that front, I'm pretty happy with what we saw here today.
Let's talk about that resilience. There are certain sectors of the economy that are still taking fundamental strain. I'm keen to understand what further interventions your ministry in particular has put in place to offer elevated support.
One of the major areas of frustration that many of industries we speak to is about the cost of electricity. So that is the one area that we're collaborating very closely with the Ministry of Energy and Electricity to resolve, especially for your high industrial sectors such as smelters. So we are in discussion with those operators in that sector to look at reducing the unit price of electricity to make them more competitive and that they can also invest in employment creation. So those are the areas that we're thinking about. Then those export sectors that are primarily affected by the tariffs, we've been discussing the possibility of a comprehensive support, including some tax exemptions that can be rolled in, but that could potentially be seen in the budget coming in February or March next year. But we are doing all that we can to assist them. Interestingly, though, export data that we received recently is telling a pretty different story. There was an expectation that most of our agricultural products will be decimated, but we've seen growth on that front, which tells you that the South African economy is fairly diversified. It's not as rigid as people have projected it to be, and that the bulk of our exports are not concentrated in the US only. We have a lot of exports that go into Africa, that go into the Middle East, that go into Europe, and we've done pretty well in those zones. So the other support measures that we're providing is to intensify that diversification of markets for the South African economy.
That means a lot of engagements for yourself and your colleagues, I can imagine.
I don't think I've spent a full hour in South Africa since this year started. We constantly have to be all over the country. We've also gotten the president and the deputy president to follow through as well. If you notice, the president just came back from a Southeast Asia tour. It's part of that strategy of diversification for South African exports. And that's going pretty well. After that, we were in Europe, in Switzerland, to also try consolidate market access for South African goods in that space. And it's going pretty well so far. Yeah.
To close off with, access to markets is one thing, but as you mentioned, we need local capacity. There's a lot of special funding and projects that have been earmarked for municipalities in South Africa. How does that also speak to driving transformation, localization as well within the local economy to ensure that trade is increased?
It helps us with spatial transformation, really. One of the worst features of the South African economy is its concentration in metropolitan areas. And a driver of that is the incapacity of local government to lead in local economic development. So assisting them with that technical capacity to improve their LED strategy and their ability to attract investment, not just to deal with rates and taxes as a almost like an accounting thing, but also use it as an economic lever to attract investment into job creation. So we welcome those interventions to help them in that regard.
Well, that is Zuko Kolimbi. He is the Deputy Minister in the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. And as you can tell, very robust conversations that we managed to engage on outside of Parliament today regarding the response to budget. But most importantly, on the back of the midterm budget policy statement, what this does mean in terms of driving trade and improving our international relations and partnerships in the global community. So many themes, so many thoughts that we need to be mindful of there. The Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Zuko Kolimbi.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.